Welcome to the Storycraft Cafe. Come in, grab a cup of your favorite beverage, and get ready to join the storytelling conversation. Storycraft Cafe is brought to you by Dabble, the ultimate cloud-based fiction writing software. Here we're going to bring together storytellers from all walks to encourage and empower you to craft your best story. Hello, welcome into the Storycraft Cafe. I am your host, Hank Garner, and I am welcoming my co-host for this series of shows, Douglas Lansborough. Doug is an author and editor, and he is a co-member of the Dabble marketing team with me, and we have some great and funny conversations all the time, and we talk about writing and all of the stuff, you know, that makes up the writer's life. And we had this idea for a new kind of show here at Dabble in the Storycraft Cafe. We interview authors a lot of times. We've had some writing challenges and things like that. And a lot of times it's us kind of picking the brain of other writers as to their experience and, you know, the way they go about it. And the interesting thing about the team at Dabble is we are all writers, and you know, we got to thinking, you know, we have experiences too. Let's you know, carve out some time and talk about writing ourselves. So I asked Doug if he would join me, and we're doing this series of shows we're calling Fireside Chats, because literally I couldn't come up with a better name. We come up with a better name. We're all for it. Welcome, Doug.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I like co-hosts. That makes me feel special.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's we're co-hosting. I don't have a better name for it. Thank you for the folks joining us live. But we didn't do a whole lot of promotion for this ahead of time. I tweeted out a link a minute ago. First time I'd used my Twitter account in probably a year, because it is a dumpster fire. But there is. I do think there is some good in Twitter, but we'll see. Or X, excuse me. I didn't mean to.
That's a future fireside chat.
That is a future fireside chat. So I am Hank Garner. I am the podcast host here at Dabble and the Storycraft Cafe. I've done 1,500 author interviews, give or take, over the last 10 years. I started with a podcast called the Author Stories Podcast, and my wife and I built that up to almost a 5-day-a-week show that we produced for a number of years. Got to know Jacob at Dabble, and we became friends. And anyway, I wound up here at Dabble, and here's what we're doing. But along that way, I have published a number of novels myself, just so you know, I have a little experience in this. One of those novels is called Writer's Block, and it's a pun, if you will, a play on a familiar thing. And we can talk a little bit about it and kind of where that idea came from later. But Doug, tell us a little bit about your writing experience. You are also a co-author, and you mostly write fantasy. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I have 5 books under my name now. Under D. William Lansborough is my author name. 2 of them are solo books set in a dark fantasy series. The other 3 are co-authored with an urban fantasy author that all came out last year. Yeah, and I'm currently working on the 3rd in my series, and hopefully veering into the realm of horror as the year progresses. We'll see. It's a lot of words to be written before I can say I'm going there.
Doug, are you there?
There we go. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if that was my internet connection or yours. We're in the middle of some thunderstorms right now, so
we are about to get some. So if I do drop, that's why. But fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. So I'm sorry. You were as when I lost you. You were saying you were delving into horror.
Yeah, that's the plan for the end of the year. I have another 110,000 words to write before then. That's the goal anyway. So yeah, fingers crossed for that as well.
So what are you doing after this week?
I wish it came that easily. Right. Aside from that, just so folks who are watching this or listening to this know, I also make content for Dabble. If you've read any of the articles at Dabble U, odds are you've read something that I've written. If not, you've read something that I've edited. Unless there's an error in it, then that wasn't edited by me.
All right. But.
And yeah, that's, I remember when.
So,
I think
where I froze.
There we go.
Is it me or you? Can you tell?
I mean, it's tough to tell. You keep freezing up for me, but if I keep freezing up for you, then
you do. Okay. Well, we're just going to soldier on through it.
Yeah.
So you have written, books for yourself and co-authored, the topic of writer's block. This is, something that I think that everyone has experienced to one, level or another. And when we say writer's block, that can take many forms for different people, but I kind of classify it as you sit down to write and the words just won't come. Some people may think when you talk about writer's block that you're just at a complete loss for what to say. For me, it's not necessarily a complete loss. It's not that I don't know what I want to write or the story I want to tell or the place that I want to get to. There's just something blocking me that's preventing me, maybe not from typing the words, but I think it mostly manifests for me as a block in my confidence. I don't know that I'm ready to write the story, or I don't know that I'm good enough to write this. And maybe have you ever dealt with this, Doug? And if so, maybe a caveat is, does it appear the same for a story that you're writing for yourself as opposed to one that you're co-writing with? So I guess what I'm really trying to get down to is, does the act of writing with someone, does that put a different kind of pressure on you? And maybe it's positive pressure, that I've got to get this done, that I have no excuses. Does it work that way at all for you?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think when I'm writing for myself, there is that confidence aspect, right? It's not like we have 20 bestsellers under our belts and we can say, hey, we're one of the best authors in the world. But no, when I'm writing for myself, there is the always nagging feeling, is this a good chapter that I've written? Is this what the audience wants? Is this what I want? And I think that can kind of get under your skin to a point where I think it less so confidence for me, more so motivation is where my blockers tend to stem from. And you might say motivation inevitably stems from confidence as well, but like, do I really want to sit down and write today if I don't think that what I'm going to be writing is going to be good? Right. That can be a huge blocker. But when you're writing with somebody else, especially in my case, there was a contract between myself and the other author. Contracts have deadlines. Contracts are legally binding agreements. I don't get paid if I don't fulfill my contract. So right. I think one of the things that differentiates your perspective of writer's block from, say it's your first novel, writer's block can be a huge deal, especially from the confidence side. But when you're working on your fifth novel and you have a career making contract or you have money on the line, writer's block doesn't tend to be that big of a deal. It's more like, hey, I need to sit down and write this.
Yeah.
I need to get these words out and I can polish them later, but you can't polish a blank page. So I need to get something. I need progress because I have a deadline looming.
Yeah. There's something about the presence of a deadline that is a motivator for me because I am the kind of person that will rearrange things, you know, to make myself feel better about it. Oh, I can do this tomorrow. And then I look and I've got 18 things that I stacked for tomorrow because I didn't want to get to them today. So, my grandfather used to have a saying, and he, you know, when we were talking about raising children, is that boundaries are a blessing. That, you know, that every yard needs a fence if you're going to put a kid out there to play. And those boundaries are a blessing to keep the harm away and to let you know what it is that, that you can operate within. And, a deadline is the same for me. It's good to know that this thing is that's hanging out there, and I have to figure out a way to break up the work in the meantime so that I hit that end goal. So that's a big helper for me, is laying out a plan and sticking to the plan.
Well, especially with a book, right? These are not small projects. Even
right.
The smallest novels are 50,000 words long, or a novella, 20, 30,000 words long, if that's what you're aiming for. But if you're writing in fantasy, 110, 150, 200,000 words, if you're feeling ambitious, that itself can be a source of writer's block or demotivation, because you're facing this mountain. And if you haven't scaled the mountain before, it's very daunting. Even if you have scaled the mountain before, it's very daunting.
Yeah.
But breaking it, giving yourself that deadline and breaking up that whole project into actionable chunks helps with that motivation. And it honestly gives you a confidence boost too. If you have to write 500 words a day and you hit that 500 words, or, you hit 750 words, it feels really good. It's such a motivator. And and I think that can help carry you through writer's block, however that may manifest for yourself. But even if you don't hit the goal, say you only write 300 words in a day, or 200, or 50, you only get 50 words down when your goal was 500. That's still good. That's still progress. And you still kind of beat that little voice inside your head saying, hey, I don't want to write today, or I can't write today.
One bonus feature of this show is going to be hot takes from Hank and Doug, and we're going to get to those in a few minutes. But you just said something that kind of triggered a question I wanted to ask you, talking about the daily word goal that you set. Talking to all of the authors that I've talked to, I think the average daily word count that most authors get is somewhere around 2,000 words a day for a really productive author. Now, there are people that can write 5,000, 10,000 words a day, but usually that's a rare occurrence, and that's kind of a marathon writing session. And those people generally know what they're writing ahead of time. They have a plan that they're writing to. And so it's really grinding out the words, not necessarily thinking through the story that, to get those 5,000, 10,000 words. A lot of the problems of story have already been worked out. We're just needing to write through it. But most people, I think, get anywhere from 750 to 2,500 words a day. And that's kind of the max that most people can produce on a daily consistent basis. When you're in serious writing mode and you've got a project you're working on, do you have a daily goal that you shoot for? And what is your daily goal? What are your daily writing sessions look like?
So, to shamelessly plug Dabble, I actually use the goal setting feature in Dabble to figure out what I need to write every day to reach my goal by a certain time. And, you plug in the days off and it does the math for you. But I before I get to my writing goal, maybe a hot take, maybe like a lukewarm take, is I caution people who have only written one book or just working on their first book to hear something like, established authors write 2,000 to 5,000 words a day, or the average is 750 words a day. Because for a lot of folks, you just don't have time to do that.
Yeah.
If you can write 1,000 words an hour and you only have 15 minutes on the subway or what have you before, or between when the kids get picked up and when you have to start work, do that. And for writer's block specifically, those little pieces will start to add up and you'll get faster and faster, which is how I approach my own writing sessions. So funnily enough, we have an article going up tomorrow about writing faster that I've written. And part of it is where I talk about my pre-writing ritual And that involves making coffee. That involves lighting a candle. I have a French cafe scented candle right now. It is amazing. It smells good enough to eat. And then I put on the same lo-fi playlist, and all of that kind of gets me into the right headspace where I'm familiar enough to start writing. And then what I'll do is 15-minute writing sprints with 5 to 10 minute breaks in between. And I'll do that either for an hour and hopefully exceed my writing goal for the day, or I'll do it until I reach my writing goal. And then I'll start work.
So your writing playlist, is it instrumental or with lyrics?
It's instrumental. It used to be with lyrics, but I found that, especially for like my favorite songs and the ones that I'd listen to daily, I start muttering them to myself, and then I accidentally type a lyric into the middle of a sentence. I found that in revisions before. It's like, what is this? No, now it's all lo-fi music, like low fidelity. It's very chill, very in the background. The one I specifically use, some people might recognize this, but there's a show, Naruto. It's something that was on when I was growing up. And so this lo-fi has that, is based off of that. So there's a little nostalgia, and like it gets my brain to all the right places.
I have a writing playlist that kind of grows with every writing project, but it always begins with the same song, and it's kind of an embarrassing. But you know, since it's just us, I'll tell it. At the beginning of the playlist is a Counting Crows song, and it's called Untitled Love Song, and it has a really catchy melody in the chorus, and it's just a sappy song, and it's a little embarrassing, but for some reason when I hear that song, my brain switches gear and it like goes into writing mode, and the wheels start turning, and then all of the other songs that playlist have nothing to do with that and are wildly different, but there's a triggering effect when I hear that song that it sets me to writer's mode. So you know, whatever.
I think some people underestimate the value or the efficacy of like an auditory or a tactile or a olfactory sensation or cue to get your mind into the right place. Cause it sounds very new agey. It sounds like it's something that we just make up to make ourselves feel better. But if you do it enough times, like any kind of habit, it will get you to at least closer to where you want to be in terms of your mindset. And the closer you can get, tying this back to writer's block, the more work you can do to overcome writer's block preemptively, the easier it will be to write words.
Yeah. Well, and I love your candle, your idea for the candle, because the sense of smell is so closely tied to memory. And I think it helps you to switch sides of your brain if you go for that whole theory of right brain, left brain. We're not here to debate that, but I can walk into a room and smell a smell and instantly be back to I'm 13 years old and I'm at my grandparents' house or at somewhere, and it's just a vivid memory, and that there's something to be said, and especially if there's a certain smell that puts you in a happy place, use it 100%.
And it will be like that candle, my glorious French cafe candle,
right?
I will only use for writing. Right. We have another half dozen candles around the house that smell fantastic, but those don't get lit when I'm writing. And the French cafe doesn't get lit when I'm not writing.
That's protect those things. Yeah. So this might be time to interject something that could be a hot take. When it comes to writer's block, I've heard so many authors say this in the past, that writer's block is not a real thing, and that plumbers don't get plumber's block. So, you can't just show up and say, I can't work today because I have writer's block. While I agree with that on the surface, is that just being dismissive of something that could be deeper? What do you think when you hear somebody give advice like that?
I think depending on the context around the advice, it can be dismissive. And that's why when I give advice about this kind of thing, I'm careful about how I phrase it. But I agree that writer's block is not a condition or something you can be afflicted with, right? But it's more this thing, this umbrella term that we assign when we don't feel like writing or when we feel like something is stopping us from writing. And at the risk of sounding dismissive, the reason I phrase it like that is because when we say we have writer's block, rather than acknowledging that there's something that makes us not want to write, we're giving away our agency. And yes. So we can say, I'm not writing my goal today because I have writer's block, rather than I'm not writing my goal today because I don't feel like it. And it's perfectly okay to say you don't feel like writing today and not write anything, right? That's fine. No one's gonna get mad at you unless you have a contractual obligation and you're behind and whatnot. But for the vast majority of people, you don't need to justify why you don't feel like writing. And if you had a bad day, you had a bad day. You don't have writer's block. Your motivation's not there. Your confidence isn't there. You want to curl up, order pizza, drink hot chocolate, whatever it is. That's a weird combination, but you get what I'm saying. It's not something that is inflicted upon us. And
right.
Therefore, it's also something we feel that doesn't have a cure. Yes. It's just something we have to either work through or accept and move on to the next day. And I don't like giving away agency like that, because writing is the thing that we love to do. And so you can maybe not so much choose to just write, but you have more power over writer's block than you think you do.
So maybe the first step in defeating writer's block is to actually identify what the problem is. I think most of the time, writer's block is not a problem of having a lack of ideas. Ideas are all around us. Most authors, one of the most trite questions that you can ask an author when you're interviewing them is, where do you get your ideas from? Because ideas are literally everywhere. They're swimming around above our heads constantly. A good writer would just reach up and grab one and then see where that idea, takes him or her. Lack of ideas is not the problem. That's not what writer's block is. It's something that is keeping you from pursuing this story. It's either confidence, you don't believe you're good enough, or you don't believe you can get to the end of the story. You don't know where the story is going to go. And if that's the case, then maybe you need to stop pantsing and start planning a little bit and start working through working through the story before you write it. Maybe that's what your problem is. As someone who has pantser tendencies, I can relate to that. Sometimes I have a great idea and then I start writing it and I run out of steam because I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what the story's trying to do. And that's when I have to stop and I have to get out my planner, and start actually thinking through the story instead of just rushing off the, into the new romance of a new story, and that is a detriment to writers, is that we always want to chase the shiny idea. And sometimes it's more work than you want it to be.
Yep. Especially, they call the second act the sagging middle, not just for readers, but for authors as well. Right. And I think maybe a future fireside chat is the whole pantser versus plotter debate, because I do tend more towards the plotting side. But I think, like you said, an element of plotting or an aspect of plotting is helpful even to people who tend to be pantsers, especially for that sagging middle. I think in addition to confidence and motivation for writer's block, there's exhaustion. Like, you could just be tired and that's fine. But there could also be overwhelm, right? You can do anything in your story. Especially if you're writing fantasy, you can literally do anything at some points. And so that sheer amount of just boundless space can be really tough to figure out where you need to go. But if you have even the vaguest outline, here's, what this chapter should be, or here's what I want by the end of it, that at least points you in the right direction in that endless space and can help make it feel less daunting.
Yeah. as a fantasy author, like you are, like you said, the ideas are limitless. You can literally do anything. Call it magic, bam. You know, mm-hmm. you can write a Western with unicorns. You can do anything. do you tend to have a plan for a kind of a scope of the book, an arc that you lay out from the beginning so that when you're writing, you don't come to these places where, oh, I could do this or I could do that. And then the choices just overwhelm you. Do you have to kind of set the boundaries for yourself and lay out where the story's going ahead of time?
To a degree, I think I've changed over the course of my writing career. My first novel, I did no plotting because I didn't even know it. Like, I knew I wanted to write a book, but I didn't know what I wanted it to be. I didn't know, honestly, the basics of the craft of writing. And so it took me 5 years to finish that book. It took a very long time. And the next book, the sequel, I didn't want it to take 5 years because I actually had fans at that point and I felt,
right,
I can't let these people down. So I structured it all in great detail, down to the scene, character arcs, notes, and everything. And that took just over a year for me to write. Then enter the three books that I co-authored last year. And partially due to the co-authoring setup, but partially due to the rate at which we had to write, I just didn't, like, it was very bare bones. Here are the main beats. Here's the arc that we want for this character and that character, and then more or less go for it. We'll see where it leads you. Now that I'm writing my own third book in the series, I outlined the main beats in, you know, your classic three act structure. I added in some extra stuff. I highlighted a few subplots and character arcs, but it is a lot less rigid than what I was writing for book two. And so there's been opportunity for a lot more exploration. And I think that's been a net positive thing. I haven't felt like there's been too much room where I've stalled out. And if there was the threat of that, like just yesterday, I finished up a scene and the next scene was something that I hadn't plotted out. And I said, I have too much momentum for this storyline that I was just writing. I'm going to skip that scene. I'll come back to it. That's okay. You're allowed to do that. It's your book.
Yeah. Well, and that's the brilliance of having a plan, is that I can skip forward and do this because it's all part of the plan. Now, we may, you know, when you go back and write that scene, maybe have another idea and there's a little editing that you need to do to weave it all together, but it's a whole lot easier than not having that plan and then just writing this disjointed mess, you know, at the end.
And even the most structured things that you create can be thrown out or revised. Like when I was writing my second book, it was all structured out, but I ended up stalling at one point and I couldn't figure out why. And it's because I hated what I was doing with one character. So I had to scrap 30, 40, 50,000 words. I can't remember the exact number, but a substantial portion of the book and rewrite it based on new trajectory. And that gave me the momentum to keep going.
Yeah.
Now, hopefully it doesn't take 30,000 words to break someone else's writer's block.
Well, that's to be seen. One thing that I have struggled with in the past is not necessarily that I'm blocked, but I'm very distracted. One of the reasons for that is because my main computer that I use is the computer that I work with all day and that I'm also doing my writing on. And, I have two monitors here and the browser and my left monitor has 16 tabs open. And my other monitor over here has 9 tabs open. When you work for a company like Dabble and there's so much exciting stuff going on and we're constantly researching things and I'm recruiting people for our podcast and I've got lots of stuff that I've got open that I'm referring back to. And then when I sit down to write, I've got all this stuff that's vying for my attention and I need to just shut it down. And so one thing that I've done lately is I have this really nifty Bluetooth keyboard that I recently ordered from Amazon. And I've got a tablet that fits there, or I've got this old phone that was in a desk drawer, literally in a desk drawer that's been sitting there for 2 or 3 years. You know, it's several generations old. It's not a great phone, but it will connect to Wi-Fi, and I, you know, installed, I wiped it completely clean, connected to my local Wi-Fi, installed Dabble. That's the only thing on here. And, you know, it makes a pretty great little distraction-free writing setup. And then the same with this tablet that I have, you know, there's nothing installed on it but Dabble. And I can, you know, the keyboard's battery-powered. I can take it out to the patio and, you know, these nice spring days and, you know, and just remove myself from all the distraction where it's just me and the story I'm writing. And that helps tremendously. A change of scenery and removing all of the competing, you know, things that are distracting you has been a huge help to me. So that's a strategy I've been employing lately, is just change the scenery, get out where it's just you and the story. And that helps me tremendously. Do you have any little hacks that you have developed other than your Kindle and your lo-fi playlist? You know, I think you probably can suffer from the same thing I did of trying to write in the same place where you work. Do you ever find those that, you know, being kind of a barrier that you, it's hard separating the place that I work from the place that I'm creative in other ways. Do you ever run up against that as well?
Yeah. And I mean, part of my, I guess, ritual, my pre-writing ritual is that I write at the kitchen table, same seat.
Okay.
All the time. And I don't work at the kitchen table. I'll work on this computer. I'll work on the couch if I, you know, want something in the background or just feel like being comfy. But I will not write really anywhere that I work, which I think is important. And I also, you just have to get rid of, for me, you have to get rid of anything that could be a potential distraction. So I have all those tabs and I either save them and close out the browser or realize that I don't actually need them anymore because they're the five things that I access every day anyway. So I just close the browser and I can open them again. But yeah. The biggest one for me is my phone. I would find that after a writing sprint, I'd check my phone for text messages and then I'd end up on Instagram Reels or YouTube Shorts. Or if I had TikTok, I'd end up on TikTok. And then suddenly 15 minutes has passed by instead of 5 or 10. So what I've actually started doing, this started against my will. My phone charger conked out on me. And so I've had to use my wife's, but she uses it overnight. So I turn off my phone overnight. So when I wake up and get back from my walk with our dog, my phone is half dead, 40%, 20%, whatever it may be. So now I plug in my phone as I'm doing my writing sprints. So I physically can't go and get it, or I'd have to get up and go and get it, which, you know, eats up a good minute of your 5 minutes. So 20% gone. It's putting up those barriers that are either inconveniences or just physically moving something out of your space goes a long way in getting rid of distractions. I know some people will turn on airplane mode as well on their laptops.
I was going to say that Windows 10, I believe, had it, and Windows 11 both have an airplane mode. Click it on there, kills the internet. That's a handy little tool. I'm not sure if Mac has that option, but there are third-party apps, and I'm forgetting the name right now, that will kill your internet for a designated period of time. I'll look that up and put it in the show notes later. I think a change of venue, so to speak, getting to another place. And I like your idea of the kitchen table as a place for creativity, period. No work goes on there and no creativity goes on in the other places. Having a designated place is a great kind of hack there.
If it wasn't so cold out, I'd get outside too, but we live in different climates.
We do live in different climates. Now August will be a different, we'll be seeking refuge from the heat and you'll probably be basking in it. Among these 35 tabs that I have open, I did some research on the good old internet for ideas of how to cure writer's block. And I have not sent you this list before because I wanted these to be truly hot takes. And we're just going to read through a few of these and just see if you think this makes sense or if this is poppycock. Strategy number one, take a break. Sometimes stepping away from your work for a short break can help refresh your mind. Take a walk, do a quick exercise, or engage in a different activity to clear your thoughts. Yay or nay?
Yay to a degree. I mean, whatever source you got that from, they said take a quick break and then said go for a walk or do an exercise, which in my mind, if I'm going for a walk, it's 20, 30, 45 minutes. That's most of my writing time gone right there. So you need to, my biggest fear is that, again, people give in to writer's block and think that it's insurmountable. And so then they use this other thing, this cure, as an excuse to say, hey, I'm fixing it. And thus I'm not actually facing the problem. I'm going for a walk instead of writing. So it's no longer writer's block. That's the issue. It's that I'm physically not in front of a keyboard. But at the same time, sometimes you're burnt out. Sometimes you just need to take a breath. Sometimes you need to go ahead, watch a 5-minute video about something in your genre. Like I write dark fantasy. So I go watch something about, I don't know, watch some medieval sword fight scene from a movie and boom, I'm inspired. That can be your short break, but don't use that as an excuse to just dismiss the rest of what little writing time you might already have.
Right. For me, that is rarely my problem. If I'm taking a break, that means I'm not writing and I'm usually taking a break to write, not the other way around. So that's a no for me. That's usually rarely my problem.
Right. So, it's also tough to justify, hey, writer's block is stopping me from writing, so I'm going to do something that stops me from writing. Like you're not addressing the situation.
Exactly. Exactly. Number two, change your environment. And I think this is something we both agreed on. A change in scenery can stimulate creativity. If possible, move to a different room, go to a coffee shop, find a quiet outdoor space to write. I think we both agree to that, and we have beat that dead horse already. Yep. Free writing. This is interesting. Set a timer for 10 to 15 minutes and write without any specific goal or structure. This can help you break through mental barriers and generate new ideas. What do you think about the freeing yourself to write whatever, even if it's not what you're supposed to be writing?
I think it works for some people, and I think it can work really well. Me personally, I have at all times, I pretty much have two stories in my head. The one that I'm currently writing and the one that I want to be writing, but I resist because I need to finish this freaking project. So when I free write, I don't want to tackle that new project because I want to give it the attention to detail that it deserves in my process. But that means that I'm now writing something that I don't consider progress towards either. And that's tough for me personally to justify. And that might be my own shortcoming. I'm very goal oriented. I always want to be progressing towards something, and not everybody is like that. And it's okay to not be like that. But for me personally, free writing is just a solid no. If I'm going to be writing anything, I'll free write a scene that's in the third act that I know I'm going to need. And then I can change it up later.
Yeah. Yeah, free writing for me is just an excuse to not write what I'm supposed to be writing. And I'm not looking for more excuses to do that.
And if we approach writer's block from the idea of agency again, if you can say, I can free write this one scene that has nothing to do with anything else, then you have to acknowledge that there's nothing stopping you from writing. There is some other source that's stopping you from writing this specific scene or this specific character. So instead of finding an exercise to do elsewhere, try and, I guess, look inwardly, reflect a little bit about why something is stopping you in this particular situation.
Great advice. Here's one that I'm specifically or particularly fond of. Set small goals. Break down your writing task into smaller, manageable goals. Focus on completing one section or achieving a specific word count. Celebrate small victories along the way. I employ this in every aspect of life. If you've ever, had children and you have a big family like I do, there's a tendency to have a sink full of dishes from time to time. And if you ever walk in and say, oh my goodness, how are we ever going to clean this kitchen? I have to separate everything into small stacks and, okay, we're going to tackle the cups and glasses first, and then we'll do plates, and then we'll do pots, and pans later. And there's something about breaking things into smaller sections that just help my brain work better. So I'm a big fan of this. And, if we're talking about 100,000 word novel, 400 to 450-ish pages, what can we break that down to scenes and can we break that down to daily word? Well, if we break that down to 2,000 words a day, 50 days, it's, going to take me a month and 2/3 to get this first draft written. And, and then I can approach 2,000 words. Fine. Coming up against 100,000 words, it feels insurmountable, but, do you concur?
Yeah, I do. And I think there's value in both recognizing that smaller daily goals are super, both important and helpful, because it lets you see that progress, but also just reinforcing that progress is progress, right? There are times when I have a 1,000-word goal for my writing session, and maybe I hit that 400 words and it's a bit disappointing. But again, I said this earlier, it's more words than zero. You made progress towards the much bigger goal. And to use a metaphor is something I'm wholly uncertified in. But if you look at something like Mount Everest, you don't just go straight for the top, right? There's base right. camps along the way. There's places where you have to stop and rest and eat. It's the same thing with a book. You can't just expect to sit down and day after day, just keep cranking out as many words as possible. Just make it more realistic and you won't disappoint yourself.
Yeah. What's the old adage? How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. Let's see. Write something else. That's kind of redundant for one we did earlier. Mind mapping. This is an interesting one. Create a visual representation of your ideas using a mind map. This can help you see connections between concepts and spark new thoughts. Okay. To me, this is a little bit like outlining or planning, where you lay out scenes and you can kind of see the progression of story, and allows you to kind of work out some of the plot points on a higher altitude situation than writing. I actually did this with a book that I wrote 6 or 7 years ago. Our local newspaper would sell these end rolls of paper, and they were rolls about this big. When they're running the newspaper, they would get to the end of a run and they would pull the spool of paper. They're normally like gigantic spools, but they would get down to about, I don't know, it was probably 150 feet on here, but it was not enough for them to do another newspaper run. So they would right. change that out, and they would sell these end rolls of paper. You could just buy it for like $5 and people would use them for all sorts of things. But I took a big sheet of that paper. We had bought it for our kids. We're making some banners or something. Anyway, I took a big sheet of that and put it on our dining room table. And I started at the top left, and just kind of drawing, kind of in my mind, what I thought this story looked like. And I drew out this whole thing from left to right. And this was a story kind of, a journey of the story in very rudimentary drawings, because I am not an artist. But it let me visualize the story, and it's something I haven't done since then. But it was very, very helpful in that situation. So that's something that I would recommend if you are in a situation where that might help. It wasn't something that I've used or employed again, but in that situation, it was very helpful. What do you think about mind mapping or using a visual representation of your story?
I think for some people, it can be a very strong tool, especially if they're more visually oriented in terms of their thinking and their imagination. I tend to, when I picture a scene in my head, I picture it like what it would be like in a movie or a high production HBO series. But, I've tried, you know, using Pinterest boards to get that visual element. I've purchased a cork board and tried putting things on it because I saw it on Instagram and it looked really aesthetically pleasing and it just didn't work for me. But if that, like, if something can give you more of a bird's eye view and a helpful path forward in your progression, I think however you create it, whether it's in words or whether it's a voice recording or whether it's mind mapping, then do what works best for you.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Read or watch something inspiring. And we touched on this a minute ago. Immerse yourself in literature, articles, or videos that inspire you. Exposure to different ideas and styles can trigger your own creativity. Okay. I think this is more of a meta thing. This doesn't seem like a piece of advice for particular writing sessions. And I agree and disagree with this, because I've watched movies and things that inspired me plenty of times. And I think this goes back to, there's no lack of ideas, in a writer's brain. The ideas are everywhere. You can be inspired by all. The problem is getting distracted by all of the great shiny ideas. Yes. Like you said, take a minute, watch a video that specifically pertains to the problem you're trying to solve. Maybe it's a medieval sword fight, like you said, and let that inspire a fight scene that you're writing, and then shut it off and get back to the writing. I think this is handy in very specific situations, for a specific purpose, for a specific time, and then shut it off. Just the continually mining for new ideas, I think, is more dangerous than not.
Yeah, I think, like you said, for if I'm sitting down for my writing session and no words are coming out, if I said to a writing friend, I'm just going to go watch an episode of a TV show to clear this writer's block, I would want them to yell at me. Maybe that's a little dramatic, but I'm a dramatic person. Rather, like you said, this is more of a meta progression kind of thing. It is, you should be consuming this content regularly anyway. You probably are, because that's what we do. We watch TV, we read books, but specifically for authors who are looking to write more than one book or make a substantial income off of books, you should be reading in your genre all the time. And that includes past stuff, so you understand the basics, but modern stuff, so you know what readers want, what vibes well with you, what publishers are looking for these days. And not only is that good market research, but it's also good inspiration.
Sure.
So it's a win-win, but don't do it during your writing time. Your writing time is so precious. Yes. Because we are so busy and you get so little of it. Unless you are an established author, you're carving out writing whenever you can. So treat it like the treasure that it can be.
Absolutely. Eliminate distractions. We covered that one already. Get to a place where just writing matters. This is an interesting one. Collaborate with others. Discussing your ideas with friends, family, or fellow writers can provide new perspectives and help you brainstorm solutions to your writer's block. I think this is a little different than collaboratively writing, like the co-authored works that you've done. But do you have a group of writer friends that maybe a critique group or maybe something less formal than a critique group? Do you rely on other people to talk through problems or specifically work out, plot problems or things like that with?
Yeah, so I don't have that group specifically. I have a shockingly few number of writing friends. Beyond the folks that I work with and a handful of people I met more or earlier in my writing journey, I actually tend to bounce most of my ideas off of friends that I made in school or friends that I've made since then who are very supportive of my work. So I have to keep in mind that they might just be telling me what I want to hear. Right. But oftentimes they are very happy to be a soundboard because they feel special because they're included and they get this little inside look into something they like. But they're also willing to just let you talk at them and let you kind of spew all these different ideas at them. But it doesn't just have to be friends either. I actually, before starting to write my third book here, I hired a writing coach that specialized in series because when I wrote my first book, I knew it was going to be a series. I knew vaguely what I wanted to do by the end, but I was a lot younger and I didn't put a lot of forethought into it. And so now I'm going into the third book and I have this resistance in my head. Like, I don't actually know some of these elements that I want. And so bringing in that professional helps me not only iron out things, but to kind of put a new spin on things that I would never have thought of myself.
Nice.
And so you might think that because it's your story, you know best, and you do know best, but you don't know everything, even though you've made up all of this yourself.
Right. That's a great point. And a story coach is a very specific kind of help that I classify differently from the friends that you talk through.
Yeah.
Because that is a great help, I would imagine. And having a professional there to help you work through that is one thing. Then your group of folks that you discuss problems with, I've actually found it to be more helpful to talk about story problems with people that are not writers. And this is different from your story coach situation. So I'm not debating what you said. This is a different thing I'm talking about. Because a lot of times if you have writer friends and you're talking about story problems, your writer friends will interject what they would do in the situation, you know, and they invariably have a story problem they're working through in their head, and you're just helping them solve their story problem with your story problem. And, you know, you can get some pretty muddy waters. I talk through story problems with my wife all the time, with different friends who are not writers and don't care about story structure. They think, they absolutely do. They just don't think about it the same way we do, but they know what a movie is that they enjoy. They know what a book is that they enjoy. They don't necessarily understand the mechanics of how the story got there. They just know whether it worked or not for them. And fall into a story, and they can help you a lot of times determine whether the story idea you have is one that works or not. And that's really what you want. You don't necessarily want someone to solve your problem for you. You just want to know if the trail you're on is a good one and if it's going to work. And, you know, getting some input from different people, especially people that are not down in the weeds with you, can be very helpful.
Yeah, I remember when I put out my first book to beta readers, I instinctively went to all the writing friends that I have made. And that was the last time I included any writers in my group of beta readers, because it's not that the feedback was invaluable. It's that they kept interjecting with things that they wanted, or, you know, I would have done this, but you're writing, you know, romance, like Harlequin romance or Regency romance, and I'm writing dark fantasy. Right. And it doesn't translate the same. And quite frankly, sometimes the writing advice just isn't what you as a writer want. It doesn't have to do with genre. It's just your preference as a writer is different than their preference. So now a lot of the friends that I do bounce ideas off of, they are my beta readers or part of my beta reading group. And so it's to touch on something else you just mentioned there. Storytelling is such like an innately human thing. We know how to do it without technically being told taught the fundamentals. The three-act structure is beginning, middle, and end. We all know how to tell a story that way. And if a story doesn't have an end, then we know it's not a complete story, right? I mean, we don't need an English class or an article or a video to tell us that. We just know that. So they understand, non-writing people understand what makes a good story because they consume good stories. So that's why I appreciate their feedback more so than writing friends.
Yeah. Yeah. We're about to run out of time. So I'm going to hit this last couple real quick. Use writing prompts. Sometimes starting with a prompt can help kickstart your writing. There are numerous websites and books filled with writing prompts to inspire creativity. This is something I have personally never employed. I love the idea of writing prompts, and you give a prompt to a group of people and, you know, it's 10 different people. You're going to get 10 different stories, even though they all started in the same place. I love that idea. I just don't do it. I've never done it. I know some people that, that love to write to writing prompts. I just haven't. Have you, and do you find value in them if you have?
I personally don't use them basically ever. And it's not because I don't find them valuable. And I know, like you, I know people who do find them very valuable and fun.
Yeah.
But it really boils down to how much time I have to write again.
Exactly.
And I think when, like, if I was still writing my first book, not that it's less of a task. It's honestly even more of a monumental task to write your first book than your sixth. But if I was writing that, then maybe I would do more writing prompts to get more practice, to have more fun with it. Cause you're, to use a pun, you're just dabbling in some, some aspects of writing. But what I do find value in is when I'm writing articles for W where they have writing prompts in them. And though I'm not writing based on the writing prompts that I'm coming up with in my head, I'll read those writing prompts and it might give me an idea for my current story, or it might give me an idea for that other project I have in my head that I can't get to right now, but I'm banking all of these different details about how the magic might work or what this one city state might look like. And so, but that's honestly no different really than reading, just read more. But if you read writing prompts, that might inspire you. I think if you're short on writing time, using a writing prompt to write something entirely different isn't necessarily the best way to defeat writer's block.
Yeah. The final one, set a routine. We've touched on this. Establish a writing routine to train your mind to be more productive during specific times. Consistency can help reduce resistance to starting. There was a mystery writer. Was it Raymond Chandler? It may not be Raymond Chandler, but someone in that same genre and time frame as Raymond Chandler. I'll think of it as soon as we're done, obviously. But he had a routine that every day he walked into his office and he turned on a metal fan that made a very specific sound as it went. And he would prep his coffee maker, but not turn it on. Just get it ready to make coffee. And then he would sit down at his typewriter and he would write, I think it was 500 words. So basically two typewritten pages. But and once he had done that, then he could turn the coffee pot on and he could brew coffee and he could enjoy a cup of coffee. But he had to have those two pages written, that 500 words, had to every day. And he had to have the sound of that old metal oscillating fan that made a very specific, you know, noise. But once his brain heard that fan and knew that the coffee pot was prepped, just waiting for his two pages, then he could grind through those words. And that, you know, became his daily writing habit that he had to, these are things that just have to happen every single day. I'm the kind of person that finds value in that. Although I'm not as consistent on a daily basis as far as the time of day, I'm more looking for snatches of time to get in 15, 20 minutes here or there. I think I would benefit greatly from setting aside an hour in the morning and just doing that. So I'm kind of preaching to the choir here. What about you, Doug? Do you benefit from that sort of rigidity and schedule setting?
Yeah, I find I am at my very best in terms of the number of words produced and the quality of the words produced once I've established that routine. But on the flip side, I have also fallen victim to the kind of internal voice saying, okay, I didn't get to do my coffee candle walk thing this morning, so I'm just going to go and I'm going to start work, or I'm going to, you know, go watch something instead. And so I think there is a danger in routine that people don't often think about, is that you can then use it as an excuse to not do the thing that you really want to do. And it sounds silly, like someone hearing this who's never had a writing routine might think, no, that's ridiculous. Like if I want to write, I'll just write. But the same strength behind all these like familiar cues and all this familiarity in the routine queuing you up for writing, without those, your brain kind of does the opposite. So at the same time you're building the habit, you need to kind of acknowledge and prepare for the fact that you will be writing outside of this routine as well. Don't become too reliant on it. And again, it boils down to, and I remind myself of this all the time, we love to write. Very few people would be an author if they didn't love telling stories. And right. So setting the routine can make it easier to face such a monumental task, but don't get so hung up on the routine, thinking that it's an essential part to doing something that you love.
Right. And with that, thank you all for joining us today to talk about writer's block. I hope that we have done a little part to demystify what writer's block is, and not beat you over the head or to discourage you for experiencing this thing that we all have dealt with from time to time, but hopefully to, you know, shine some light on it and to give you some things to try to help you to have a better quality writing life. Doug, thank you for joining me. I'm excited to continue this series and to get into all sorts of shenanigans in the future.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you.
That's our episode for today. There's so much more to come as we talk to authors about the craft of writing, but also the business of publishing. Be sure to subscribe to the Storycraft Cafe podcast in your favorite podcast app so that you never miss an episode. The Storycraft Cafe is made possible by Dabbl. Writing a book is challenging. Your writing tool should not be. Dabbl is an easy-to-use online writing tool packed with helpful features that allow beginning novelists and published authors to create amazing stories. Visit us at dabblewriter.com and start your free trial today. Thanks for listening.